You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Good morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good morning on this Friday, Groundhog Day. Yeah, how do I know it's Friday? Because I looked at the calendar, right? Remember, if you're a Catholic, you got to fast on Friday. And that doesn't mean crab legs and lobster bisque, okay? That's not what that means. That's not what that's about. That's not the spirit of don't eat meat on Friday. It's a concept of sacrifice and fasting. So pay attention to that. The big news, the commanding officer of the USS Theodore Roosevelt relieved after his ship, the Big Stick, that is the Theodore Roosevelt, pulled into Guam and began testing sailors. And so, he's supposedly relieved. And what's behind that? And, you know, not knowing just what's leaked to the media and what you've seen, I would tell you that it's one of two cases. Either he acted rashly, and so he would have got frustrated very quickly and did not allow and support the Navy working through the problem. Okay, and then in his rashness, he made sure that, I guess he emailed his letter to his superiors to a media outlet, his hometown newspaper, evidently. And look, I mean, if he's the CEO of the Roosevelt, he's no dope. He knows what's going to happen when he does that. So if that was a rash act based on frustration, you know, in my opinion, that, you know, it's understandable that the Navy would relieve him. If they're going through the same process that they go through with everybody else, with the Roosevelt, then, you know, and the Navy's working through it, then I think it's understandable that the Navy would relieve him. So that's one case. Right, because anybody that goes outside the chain of command, let alone go to the media, right, and you're a commanding officer, you're asking for it. And those are just the rules of the road. You're expected to work through the chain of command. Now, let's talk about the case where he would be justified in doing that. So, depending on who sits above him in the 7th Fleet, okay, and how they react to this, and the message that he receives back. And let me just tell you, the Seventh Fleet, you're familiar with them, right? It is the fleet that owned the Fitzgerald. It is the same fleet that owned the USS McCain. Now, sure, there are different people there now, but same organization, right? If he repeatedly, right, got treated like he was crazy, and he lost confidence in the ability of the people above him to both grasp the situation, which I can't imagine that they couldn't grasp it, because, you know, back years ago, the way we used to communicate, I was thinking about this when I was talking about Shipboard Life the other day. The way we communicated was by message traffic. Okay. And in the morning, you had a read board. And your admin guys would go through messages, and they would put the read board together. And the read board would consist of messages. You know, there might be, you know, a MAR admin, which is, you know, an administrative instruction to the whole Marine Corps. There might be a white letter from the Commandant. So a letter from the Commandant to everybody in there. That would be a naval message format traffic. And so they would put, you know, so, and then they would segment it, right? So this would be general traffic. This would be like message traffic to the ship that might be of interest to the Marine detachment. And this would be message traffic to the Marine detachment. And that might be, these people are coming to your unit. These people are departing your unit. This person's approved to school. These are promotion. These are people that are going to be promoted this month. These are going to be promoted next month, right? This promotion board is meeting, you know, all that kind of stuff, which would be very specific to your organization. So that's how we used to get messages. Well, when we communicated like that and we couldn't speak, because we simply didn't have the technology, you wondered whether sometimes when you sent a message, right? You wondered when you sent a message, I mean, do they really understand? I mean, do these words that I'm sending, do they understand the gravity of what I'm saying? And there was all kinds of ways to do that, right? In terms of priority and all kinds of other things. So anyway, we don't have that anymore. Pick up the phone and talk to the guy. You can video conference with him. And if those people don't understand, then you're left as a leader with a moral decision. And the moral decision is, if I don't act and some of my sailors, you know, die, that's on me. And I know they're not taking the appropriate action. Now, you have acting Secretary of the Navy, yeah, for what that's worth. So you got an acting Secretary of the Navy, and but I mean, in my opinion, this is Seventh Fleet issue. And so he made a decision, and when he hit send on his email, he knows he's going to be relieved. Now, we'll say, well, when you're inside. And you know all the different conversations you've had, and when you write that email and you hit send, and you include a media outlet on that, you just relieved yourself. Now somebody else has to go through the formalities of it. But if that is the case, and I have no idea which one of these is the case, if that is the case, you know, for eternity. You know, he will be able to put his head on his pillow and go to sleep at night and not bear the burden that he did not do what he thought was appropriate at a critical moment in his career. That he did not, as many senior officers do, say, yeah, you know, I really shouldn't, I'm not going to say anything because, I mean, shit, I don't need to be relieved as the commanding officer of the Roosevelt. Yeah, I just don't need it. It's going to screw up my whole career. I mean, I'm on the fast track, man, to be something big, which means when I get done with this whole thing, I'm going to make millions of dollars. That's how this thing works. So I'm confronted with this moral dilemma. Yeah, I'm just going to toe the party line, and we'll see what happens. So if he looked at that and said, screw that, I know that based on what my medical officers have told me, that this is too dangerous, then... So again, I don't rightly know. You'll see people riding as if they do, and they don't, because he hasn't spoken yet. And so it'll be one of those two things. Either he's a stable weapons platform, and when a lot of extra electricity got put to his ass, with a very steady hand and a very cool thought process, he looked at what was happening. He said, this is not acceptable, and he hit send on his email. Or it's he got frustrated, there was miscommunication, the right people weren't in the loop, and then he did something rash. So I don't know, obviously what the case is. I will say this, I mean, when you see that got into the news, you knew that dude was done. The only way he wasn't done is if somebody else, right, in the chain of command, leaked that to somebody. And when it became apparent that that was not the case, that dead man walking. I want to talk about OPEC for a second. What's the deal, Saudi Arabia and Russia? So what's going on there? What is Dr. Evil attempting to do? You have like two of the, I don't even know. What would we call the... Mohammed bin Salman. What would we call that guy? Wrong way? He always seems to be screwing something up, right? So you have Dr. Evil and Prince Wrong Way, going head to head. All right, so what's going on there? So there's a piece in the Washington Examiner. So take it for what it's worth. Who wrote it? A guy named Tom Rogan. Saudi Arabia is pushing for a new global oil output agreement with Russia and a consequent stabilization of prices. While Vladimir Putin is open to a deal, he sees opportunity in playing hardball. Oil prices have crashed amid the recent failure of the Saudis and the Russians to reach an agreement. And that agreement is designed to reduce the world glut of oil. In response, the Saudis increase their output, sending prices even lower, which impacts Russia's revenue, right? So they have an economic war going on between the two. Saudi in a much better position to withstand it. But Dr. Evil's not going to break a sweat. Under Trump administration pressure, the Saudis signaled that they would be willing to talk to the Russians. Such a deal, right, would entail Saudi and OPEC acceptance that Russia be allowed to proportionally sell more oil on global markets than other nations. So what Russia wants is a deal, right, to maximize his oil revenue, which Russia needs. So, but here, there's a couple other things that are at play here. Putin wants to crush the American shale industry, which essentially caps the international price of oil because of the amount of oil that comes out of the shale industry. But the shale industry has gone through this before, right? I mean, the shale industry is like a cockroach that people have tried to, in North Dakota, on the western side of North Dakota, there's this oil reserve that's got like more oil in it than God can ever create again on the planet. The Bakken, it's called. But you have to drill down, you have to go past hell And then you got to drill through hell and then go further towards the Earth's core, and then you find the Bakken. So because of the technology involved, and, you know, it costs more to break even. So the price of oil has to be, I want to say, over $50 a barrel for shale oil to be. Now, that's just from my recollection. It could be higher. And it probably is now. I'm not sure. But I can look it up. Break-even point on shale oil. What do you think it is? Break-even point for U.S. shale oil is, the break-even price for U.S. shale industry is at $48 to $54 per barrel. How about that? Right? There you go. Anyway, so Putin wants to hurt the American shale oil industry, hence the president's issue with it, right? And so, anyhow, so that's agenda item number one, right? The whole fracking business, the whole shale oil business, you know, the Russians trying to get after that. I mean, what they'd really like is for the Democrats to outlaw fracking. And then they could, that would allow the international price of oil to become uncapped, which nobody wants to see. It's good that America's, right, energy independent. His second consideration is that he wants to show Prince Wrongway who the boss is relative to this, and that he can tie up revenue in the entire Middle East if he cares to. So the article goes on to say that Putin made inroads in terms of Russian stability, Russian ability to influence events in the Middle East over the course of the last 24 months. He's now seeking to make another point to that audience that we will have a say and that I am nobody to be trifled with. So, interesting. The article concludes with this. Ultimately, we should expect a Saudi-Russian deal, but not quite yet. Not until Putin has tried to make the Saudis... Not until Putin has tried to make the shale producers and the Saudis sweat a little bit more. So what it is, right? Dr. Evil being Dr. Evil. I got an email this morning. It might be the longest email I've ever received here on All Marine Radio. Yeah, from a guy in Brazil. Hold on, I'll tell you how many words it is. I mean, it's amazing. And it's about an interview I did with Sergeant Major Zickfuth. The email in size 12 font, Arial, pasted into my Microsoft Word document is 2.5 pages long. That's at size 12 font. Now, normally, if I use my normal font and I go to size 11, it's still over 2 pages, which is size. So, I mean, it's a long email. I'm trying to find how many review. I think under review you can find word count, right? How many words? So it is 1,500 words email about the impact that Sergeant Major Zickfuth had on this guy. And so he researched him a little bit and he found the interviews that I've done with, you know, with Sergeant Major Z, and he wrote this incredible email. I mean, just things that happened here on All Marine Radio. Right. And so it's just one of those amazing things that happened to you. Speaking of that, I had another one of those things happen to me yesterday, talking about post-traumatic winning with people. Had a chance to talk to a White House fellow yesterday on a conference call with an Air Force PhD, and she set the whole thing up, as well as a Stanford PhD that are very, very interested in post-traumatic winning. Yeah, how about that? And it was very, very cool. And so I'm trying to write things. And so hopefully we'll collaborate with them and write something that introduces post-traumatic winning to academic people, to policy people and whatnot. So, but it was very cool. You know, as people who are involved in policy matters, you know, as we talked about data, as we talked about, you know, about where this goes. And then the other thing I got asked was, how applicable is this to everybody? And if you listen to this program, you know that post-traumatic winning applies to everybody. And so this is a very cool call, very cool call. So I'm excited about that. And we'll see what this happens. We'll see what happens with this. And, you know, post-traumatic winning, since nobody gathers in groups of more than two, post-traumatic winning is kind of put on hold right now because you can't get people together to have them listen. So anyway, but nonetheless, pretty exciting stuff. Pretty exciting stuff. The yeah, and then the only other thing I want to talk about was you know, a lot of interesting responses from the Kenny and Lynch episode yesterday about, we kind of talked about the Mark Kansian interview about the burger plan. And then we talked about the Hammes interview about the burger plan. And then we kind of roundtabled, you know, final thoughts on it. Anyway, all kind of in an effort to create a framework, you know, what is the impetus of this? When faced with other quote-unquote revolutions in the past, how have other commandants behaved? What did the Marine Corps do? And so anyway, and so I was reading some articles online yesterday, and I have to tell you, I'm, you know, moderately disappointed. Moderately disappointed. I'm moderately disappointed that whenever the commandant's in public, nobody seems to ask him a hard question. I mean, they'll ask him about his pronouncement, but they don't ask him about the fundamental, you know, nature of what he's doing relative to the Marine Corps. And so it's just, I would tell you, I mean, it's a bit disappointing when you read articles and what they want to talk about is the, you know, is not, you know, what in fact this does to the ability of the Marine Corps to be what it's been for the nation. And does, you know, does tilting the whole Marine Corps towards what is universally billed as the least likely war that we'll fight, does that make sense? When you have no buy-in, and you have no public buy-in from the Navy or the Army on the Marine Corps' course of action. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. It's disappointing, and I probably shouldn't be disappointed, but it seems to be that the critical analysis of where the Marine Corps is headed is absent. The other interesting thing is the Marine Corps Gazette. It'll be interesting to see, given given what I hear personally, what I would tell you, what Jeff Kenny hears from our friends, our, you know, both junior and senior to us, you know, our peers. It'll be interesting to see how the Marine Corps Gazette treats this. And And if they will, I mean, it's supposedly an independent organization. So anyway, the good morning on a Friday. The chef's going to join us in about 35 minutes. What else is going on today? And that's it. It's a Friday. Weekend coming up. Good news for Colleen. There's no school on Friday for her. Yeah, she homeschools 4 days a week. Not homeschool. Homeschool would be implying that I have something to do with it. She goes to class online, right, 4 days a week. 3-day weekend. Yeah. Colleen's enjoying. And then she got told yesterday that they're probably not going back to school this year, even if, you get the all clear on the 1st of May, which would mean they would still have almost 2 months left of school. And you start thinking about, the problems that causes for, so people are going to go back to work, but their kids are going to stay at home. Yeah, that's the plan. And so whether we like it or not, no school means somebody staying home, which means either you're going to send your kids to daycare, you're going to bring in a babysitter. All of that's going to cost money. So, and I feel like a lot of the decision making that gets done is done too soon, and I believe that's because most people are uncomfortable with dynamic decision making, right? With dynamic decision making, and so, so rather than saying, "Hey, look, on May 1st, by May 1st at the latest, we'll make a decision. And with the best information that's available, no later than May 1st will we tell you what the plan is for the rest of May and probably for the school year." But I think a lot of what's been said has been based on, the New York and New Jersey curve. And I see those curves as fundamentally different, right, curves than what you see from the rest of the country. So anyway, and again, I don't think enough footnotes have been given that people to understand that what you're seeing Governor Cuomo do on TV every day, right, is a situation that's vastly different than what most states are confronting. And so if you listen to Governor Cuomo on a daily basis, he's dealing with certainly a much, much different situation in New York City based on the fact that they did not put in, distancing rules, mandatory distancing rules till later, based upon that they have a mature subway and a Metropolitan Transit Authority that includes trains that puts people in close proximity, touching the same surfaces millions of times every day. Well, the rest of the nation doesn't have something like that. So I don't know if you use New York's path as the one that we're all going to go down, and he said that before, then. So I think in hindsight, I think when this all gets pulled apart, we're going to see that, next time keep the governor of the state of New York on local New York television, right? Because what he's saying doesn't apply to the whole country. So anyway, good morning to you. Whitney Houston makes this morning official.
Who's right?
read you an email. Mac, do you consider yourself steadfastly opposed to Berger's plan? I would not use the word steadfastly. Based on what I've seen now, based on the conversations I've had with a number of general officers, based on the way other commandants have steered the historical precedent of the Marine Corps, as other commandants steered through other similar quote-unquote revolutions, I would tell you that I am not steadfastly opposed. I'm not steadfastly opposed to it. But I would tell you that based on what I've seen, I'm currently opposed to it. And I'm opposed to it in its current form. And so I think that would be, and again, this framework that we're building to evaluate it, right? Honestly, I mean, I didn't know until I started researching how other commandants had steered the Marine Corps through similar revolutions. You know, but I found out. I looked at Marine Corps history. And so, again, what I've learned, you know, and then Mark Kansian made me smart about the predictive failure of people that work in think tanks and predict and write throughout history. So, yeah, I would consider myself, and again, to me, it's at the end of the day, when you lay the cards on the table, is it the prudent thing for the Marine Corps? And I think you'd be hard, in my opinion, you'd be hard pressed to make that case. And so, yeah, I would tell you that based on what I've seen, I'm opposed to it. Steadfastly, no. I mean, as I think you heard in the Lynch and Kinney thing, if there's missing footnotes that we don't get, then somebody should show it to us. You know, explain these things. Explain, you know, foraging for all these 100-man organizations and ships that are going to be bombing around the Pacific with missiles. Explain that. How do you mean that? And explain it in the context that you're going to have Chinese hunting your ass out there. Because foraging, I mean, again, as we said in the interview, that's like fairy dust. Yeah, they'll forage. Gone. Okay, explain now fairy dusting when you have thousands of Chinese looking for you with weapons trying to kill you. Oh, that's a little bit different. Yeah, no shit it is. Right? So that's how I would explain it. But again, none of us are haters. We're all interested. It's not the first time we've argued about something in the Marine Corps. So, you know, show me the money. Show me how it works. I'm not stupid. All right. This is dedicated to the weekend. Now, with your freer time on the weekend, now that you're at home, right? Emphasis on getting outside. If you got a garden, work in it. Create a project for yourself. I do believe Home Depot's still open. At least it is here in Southern California, which means you can go buy some plants, which means you can make a garden. So you can do something you haven't done in a while. Now, if you're part of the world, hasn't thawed out yet, okay, you got to be a little bit more creative. Maybe you're beginning to plan the garden. Maybe that's what you'll do because you got to stay inside. Okay, but a greater endeavor to get outdoors, a greater endeavor to exercise and treat it like the weekend, even though it feels like just the next day. So you got to do what's called trick fucking yourself. Okay, yeah, that's what that's called. And yeah, don't you understand? It's Saturday. That's why I'm doing this. Yeah, but it feels... Shh, don't say that. It's Saturday. Get with the program. So, yeah, change it up. Get outside more. Do something different. Let your brain be creative and make that happen. That's dedicated. This is dedicated to that thought. We fight our country, we care our
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
News headline, Governor Cuomo, we will not allow people to die because we don't have ventilator. And if you notice in the president's press conference, what the president has said is, we're not going to ship these things to states anymore. Now, without mentioning Governor Cuomo's name, what the federal government is frustrated with is you have people in hospitals screaming, right? And they name the president. Trump's not sending us this stuff. And then the federal response is, no, we're sending it. We're sending it. Right? And then they're saying, well, where does it go? Well, when we send it to the state sends it to a warehouse and they control it. So yesterday in President's press conference, they rolled out a DOD procurement guy. And then they're now using software to grab data from hospitals all over the country to identify need. And then from producers, factories, they will route shipments straight to the hospital. Now, I don't want to say that has a political overtone to it, but when you see, right, when you see the way this thing goes, you see comments like that, and you see the federal government, it's not in charge of production of ventilators, although you would think they are. With governors saying, you know, you have the power to do this. So it's kind of interesting to watch. And now the president trying to get the governors out of the way. So, and really, if the federal government comes to the rescue to the local level, as much as they say, let's take the politics out of it, they can't help but do it. And again, I think Governor Cuomo, man, at the end of the day, he'll have a lot to answer for. His slow response, his Chicken Little stuff, you know, and maybe his Chicken Little stuff is absolutely appropriate for New York City. But what it did, it tainted the conversation in the rest of the country. Because the rest of the country is not following that arc. Yeah, so anyway. Currently, in Quantico, Virginia. Well, I can't do this without the appropriate music. Okay, so anyway. Sunny and 59 down the coast at Camp Lejeune. It is sunny at 64. Speeding Captain Lejeune, and Matt Kiker said to say hey to everybody. You know, I talked to him yesterday. And he's doing good. Just got himself a new apartment. How about that? Anyway, 29 Palms reports sun and 55 degrees. Pendleton clouds in 55. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 67. In Okinawa, Shima. At Camp Butler, it is dark cloudy in 68. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is dark cloudy in 73. And in the Al-Anbar province starting to warm up. It is early in the evening, and it is clear with 77 degrees. So got into probably the mid-80s today in Iraq. At the home of Auburn Radio, it is sunny and 59, looking for a high of 68, which means add 5 degrees to that. So I'll say 73. On Saturday, clouds and 67. Saturday night, rain, but it's only a 30% chance. So that means in California, it doesn't rain. Okay, just for the record. And then on Sunday, a 30% chance of rain and 65, which means it'll be partly sunny on Sunday. That's how it works. Don't ask me why. All right. More of Auburn Radio coming up next right here on your home for it. We'll check news headlines. And there's a bunch of them. Next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
No sunshine when she's gone.
It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know. Sunshine when she's gone.
If you haven't heard, Bill Withers passed away. I think this is his best song.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's his house, just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away.
The second I know. That's the best part of the song. It's coming up.
Anytime she goes away.
I guess it's not. The no, his other huge song was Lean on Me, right? And so, no, he's got a very distinct and an incredible voice. So Bill Withers passed away this morning in breaking news. All right, let me just go over some news headlines. As I said earlier, the chef's going to join us, and we'll talk a little bit about food today. Yeah, so if you have food questions, send them in. Let me get to some shithole weather here before I forget. Good morning and happy Friday, Mac, from Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. A positive from Saskatchewan's average daily temperatures continuing to be at least 20 degrees lower than normal is that it helps keep people isolated indoors. Oh, because we need to be isolated. Today, Churchbridge's skies are to remain clear. Winds out of the northwest at 10. The current temperature is 1 above. And with the wind chill, feels like 13 below. Our afternoon high is going to be 23 degrees above zero and will feel like 12. Rather than a snowy yard picture, here's another fantastic photo from my friend Peter. He said there was a happy ending. And the picture is of two deer, and they're on the railroad tracks. Yikes. And you can see them... You could see the deer, they're not looking at the train. Train's got its lights on, kind of coming towards the deer. Hence Bev's caption of it had a happy ending. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota, right across the river from the chef. Current conditions at the north end of East Grand Forks, it's still frickin' snowing. Snow continuing for at least 2 hours, according to AccuWeather. I've had 13 inches at my house. The winter storm warning is in effect until 1 p.m. Current temperature is 14 degrees. Feels like 8 below. Looking for a high of 23 degrees today. Winds will be out of the northwest at 18, gusting to 25. Yeah. Low tonight will be 2 degrees below zero. My shovel is going to get a workout today. Grrr. But on a positive note, my gym is closed, so shoveling will be my workout for the day. Well, there you go. And then here's a whole series of pictures. Here's Ruth Ann's car, right, with 18 inches of snow on and around it. Here's the passenger side, which is inaccessible by foot traffic, unless you want to plow through the snow. Here's a path she shoveled to get into the driver's side of it. here's snow on her in her yard and outside of her window. So there you have it. In Massachusetts, right? And the wife of Chris Cox is an essential state employee who works from home these days, right? She takes it seriously too. 14 years of Catholic education. Anyway, current position for Chris is Webster. It's supposed to be 45 degrees today. And it's staying that way for about 36 hours. Rain, wind is the issue, coming in at 35 miles an hour sustained with gusts of up to 50 miles an hour near the coast. Clearing on Saturday afternoon. Chris from Webster out. From Ruth Ann. Oh, man. She says, I love L&M Meats. So we'll ask the chef about L&M Meats because we used to talk about L&M Meats and they weren't even a sponsor. And then they would have us come down and do the show we would do the show from the lobby of their butcher shop. Yeah. So, and that was a pretty good deal because they'd give you samples. And then when you're with the chef, everybody used to try to impress him. And they'd give him really good stuff. And I'd be standing there with my mouth water and my hand out. I'll have some. Okay, Mac. Here, you can have some too. Kim, would you like more? Well, what about me? Anyway, what a treasure that business is. I just ordered hamburgers, sirloins, ribeyes, and a couple of roasts from them for curbside pickup later today. I absolutely love them. Even with all this crap going on out there right now, there are definitely bright spots, and L&M is a bright spot. Have a good weekend, Mac. I will. So anyway, so there you have it. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota, a weather update. We'll go around, check news headlines. I've talked about one of them, and that is the relief of the commanding officer of the USS Roosevelt. And honestly, nobody's going to be able to tell you whether I'm sure Navy Department officials have one opinion. The crew gave him evidently an incredible send off. They certainly have another opinion. And, the question is, as he worked with his superiors, was it his impatience? Was it his inability to communicate? Or were they simply slow? And him sending that email to the media was appropriate. Right. So evidently, sailors were shouting, Captain Crozier, as he left the ship. So anyway, giving him a send-off. So that in the news today. Supposedly the oldest person to survive the coronavirus is a U.S. Army veteran from World War II. He's 104. His name's Bill Lapshies. And you know that got turned into Lapshit. Where's Lapshit? Lapschies. So that's too easy, right? So anyway, he's thought to be the oldest living person to survive it. How amazing. How amazing is that? In early March, he and a small group of tenants living together at a state-run facility in Lebanon, Oregon, started feeling ill. They were among the first Oregon residents to test positive for coronavirus. His granddaughter, Jamie, told the Washington Post, "We thought he's 103. What are the odds he's going to come out of this?" Right? They first thought he had pneumonia. Then he tested positive for coronavirus. That virus goes up and down, and you really don't know what the next day is going to bring, his granddaughter said. After those couple of long days where we weren't quite sure, he just got better and better. By last Wednesday, his 104th birthday, he was feeling healthy again, able to remove his mask and step outside for the first time in weeks. He is fully recovered. He's very perky, his daughter Carolee Brown said. So if he's 104, his daughter's what, like 85? Right? He's fully recovered, he's very perky and excited. He was born on April 1st, 1916. He worked in a paper mill in Salem, Oregon after high school. He married his wife, Almadine Boutel, in 1939. They had two daughters, six grandchildren, 14 grandchildren, and five great-great-grandchildren. He was drafted into the Army in 1943, worked, and then after the war worked as a car salesman. His wife died in 2001. They had been married for 62 years. He lived on and maintained a family farm until 2014 when he sold it to his great-granddaughter and moved into the retirement community. How about that? How about that for a cool story? Let me just check headlines in USNI News because they will have, I'm sure, something interesting. Talking about changes to Marine Corps boot camp, I talked to you about a friend of mine who went to his daughter's officer candidate school graduation only to be told, like, yeah, you can't come. So the separation, which is sad because those ceremonies on those parade decks are really family events. First time a family sees somebody after 13 weeks or however many weeks they've been gone, and they're fundamentally a different person. And so it's very cool to see. Very cool to see. Article by Megan Eckstein. We like Megan. Marines Force Design 2030 may allow MUSE tailored for different geographies and adversity and adversaries. Well, let me tell you, it better allow that. It better allow that. Again, my frustration with writers is that, to me, they're not drilling into this deep enough. They're not asking hard enough questions because it's too squishy. Headline, Carrier Roosevelt CO relieved over extremely poor judgment in creating a firestorm over the COVID-19 outbreak. So this is the Navy's, right? This is the Navy's point of view. Okay. The carrier commander who warned that his crew didn't have enough resources to fight an accelerating COVID-19 infection aboard a ship has been relieved of command. Acting Secretary of the Navy Thomas Maudley told reporters Thursday afternoon. The USS Theodore Roosevelt, CVN, so carrier is the C, V stands for fixed wing, so it has jets, right? And then N stands for nuclear. So CV was old designation for fossil fuel burners. And I was on CV-61, the USS Ranger, right? One of John Paul Jones's ships. And, fossil fuel burner. Anyway, according to Maudley, Captain Brent Crozier showed extremely poor judgment in how he sent a message asking his chain of command for more resources to treat and isolate sailors who had contracted the virus over the last month and continued to spread it amongst the carrier's crew. Crozier wrote a four-page letter and sent it over an unclassified network to not only his chain of command, but also 20 to 30 other people in the service, Maudley said. In the letter, which was leaked to the San Francisco Chronicle, Crozier warned that if adequate steps weren't taken to isolate and treat the crew of 4,800 sailors, the outbreak would spread and some sailors would certainly fall to the virus. Maudley told reporters that he didn't know if Crozier leaked the letter to the paper, but that the manner in which he handled the information called into question his ability to lead the carrier. I'm not trying to suggest he leaked the information. That to me sounds like that he knows he leaked the information. He's just not going to say it. What I will say is that he sent it out pretty broadly and he didn't take care that it couldn't be leaked. So anyway, only Crozier knows what he did and why he did it. It's either one of two cases. Either he acted in poor faith relative to the people above him who were working through the problem in the way they worked through it at every base, with every ship, and every installation, right? That he got frustrated and he acted rashly. In that case, he should be relieved. However, again, as I said earlier, the 7th Fleet is the home of the USS McCain, the USS Fitzgerald,
and those accidents and everything that happened surrounding it. So if he didn't get what he thought he should have received from the people above him, then he, as a commanding officer of that ship, has a decision to make. Am I going to accept this and put the lives of my crew at risk? Or am I going to call bullshit on them, knowing that when I call bullshit, right, I set the stopwatch to my career and to my time as the commanding officer of the USS Theodore Roosevelt? So no small decision. And again, nobody knows. I mean, people can speculate, but that's about as far as you can go. Let's see. Marine Corps Times. Not seeing it. So I won't go anywhere there with you today. And then the top five stories in Early Bird are as follows. Number one, Navy fires Theodore Roosevelt, commanding officer, following a leaked letter about COVID-19 assistance. Two, inside the Indo-Pacific Command's $20 billion wish list to deter China and why Congress may approve it. Now, here's a question. Do you think any of the Marine Corps wish parts of the wish list are on the Indo-Pacific Command's $20 billion? I'll have to check it out and report to you on Monday. The Pentagon is looking at reducing but not eliminating operations during COVID-19 pandemic. With more than 800 service members fighting coronavirus a month after the first soldier in South Korea tested positive, the Defense Department is keeping a close eye on the pandemic's impact and preparing to make adjustments. Again, I mean, Marines got pulled out of an exercise in Arizona earlier this month. I mean, shit, can you be safer than in the desert right now? I don't think you can. But anyway, yeah, and so you bring them back to your base and you tell them to social distance. And I was talking to a Marine yesterday who called me, and I said, so what do you guys do? He said, well, we do things virtually. Get together as squads and we social distance, right? We keep 10 feet between each other. We PT as a squad and we stay, apart, but the gyms are closed, so we can't go there. The chow hall now, the hours had to be, extended by about 2 hours because you can only have so many people in the chow lines. So now they have schedules, what units can go when, how many people can be in the chow hall, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems to me that you'd be safer on the desert, for God's sakes. But that's not my decision. Number four, deal done. Boeing will have to rip and replace KC-46 sensors and camera systems on its own dime. Boeing and the Air Force have finalized an agreement to fix the KC-46 aerial refueling tanker's most serious technical problem. This is stunning. After all these years, right, after all these years that, somehow or other, Boeing can't get this right. I mean, reading about it, and I just started reading about it a couple months ago, to me it's stunning that you're designing a tanker and the shit doesn't work. And can you imagine? Yeah. And so this fight's been going on for a while, and now Boeing's going to have to eat it. Yeah, and the last story in the top 10, Esper's pandemic response draws fire as criticism deepens. Lawmakers, retired officers, and experts say the defense secretary was slow to act, far too willing to leave the tough choices to local commanders. And they cite in Esper a lack of leadership. Overseas headlines, U.S. military fears pandemic could lead to an ISIS resurgence. Yeah, well, let me tell you, this is going to hit them too. So just for the record, they'll deal with it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the chef's going to join us. So don't touch that dial. We're going to talk food with Mr. Foodie himself. So more of All Marine Radio, All Marine Radio, coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.